Radiotopia.
I'm excited to tell you that one of our favorite Radiotopia siblings, Ear Hustle, is back with a new season. Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast. Co-hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods have recently been spending time at four California prisons and have a season's worth of funny, surprising, and unforgettable stories to share. In a recent episode, they were able to visit a groundbreaking prison hospice where they spoke to men who are grappling with the reality of dying inside prison. Also coming up this season are stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells, complicated mom-daughter relationships in prison, and incarcerated people who wonder whether they've become too comfortable behind bars. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
I do feel like I'm frozen in time at the end of like a cliffhanger episode of a TV show where I'm just like, you know, what's going to happen next? But we all feel that way sometimes, don't we?
Spend just a minute speaking with him and you quickly understand one thing. John Griffiths loves TV. So much so that he often peppers his descriptions of life experiences with references to life on screen. And right now, John is living in a reboot.
I sold my home in Hollywood and moved back into the house where I spent much of my childhood in Newport Beach.
John relocated to the quiet serenity of Newport Beach during the quarantine of 2020. And while it's been an adjustment, he enjoys it. He's in his 50s, and yeah, this wasn't the plan, which might be stressful to some. But John's remarkably unfazed.
It's like at a certain point, nobody knows what's going to happen next, and that's sort of comforting when you know that nobody knows that.
Helping him feel content, he's surrounded by the comforts of the past.
Not a lot has changed since when I was first here as a little kid. She has a rotary phone, and it's the same carpet. Right now, it is a weird sort of dirty brown, but not like a color wheel would say dirty brown. It's like brown that's dirty. There's a really cute grandfather clock, the old-fashioned ding, ding, which, you know, is the stuff of horror movies, but here it's kind of cute. Ding dong! It's noon. The clock works. I thought the clock didn't work. Oh, wow.
John isn't just living alone. He's there taking care of his 85-year-old mom.
Hi, Mom. Can you turn off the TV? What are you watching first? What are you watching?
The Martian.
The Martian?
Yeah.
With Matt Damon?
What?
Is it good?
She lives in the house next door, just a few feet from John's cozy studio. The house used to belong to John's grandma. When he was little, John and his mom shared the studio.
It definitely feels like a wacky sitcom from the 70s or any decade. You know, one that's sort of dark. Coming this fall on NBS, a 55-year-old writer moves in with his 85-year-old mom during a pandemic. What happens when these two wacky characters, start wearing masks? My mom will rattle my little window and say, can you come into my bedroom and smell something? Which is not something that, you know, you really want to hear from your 85-year-old mom.
Since moving, John's taken control of the situation and adapted to caretaker mode. He gets his mom medicine and food so she doesn't need to put herself at risk at a store. And he appreciates finally having time to discuss what matters most.
So a lot of our conversation is really what kind of food made her stomach feel lousy. She'll get fairly detailed about the bowel movements, and we'll laugh about it.
I had chicken cordon bleu tonight.
And how did it hit you?
Ugh.
And he makes sure he protects her, even at home, which is tough.
When I go around the patio in the morning and check on her, I do put on my mask. It's very weird. I haven't been able to hug my mom, and she's not really a hugger type. She never has been, but every now and then I can see in her eyes that she wants to hug. It's very sad, but it's better to be safe than sorry.
When life hands us surprises, many of us react by trying to control the uncontrollable. But John is an expert at navigating moments like the one we're all facing right now. Moments of uncertainty and isolation. And what helped equip him for moments like this? The answer is sitting on a shelf, in a closet, in a binder. On its cover are three letters that John scribbled as a kid. NBS. And until now, He's never shared it.
Did you know that I created my own imaginary network called NBS?
No.
Yeah.
From Radiotopia and PRX, I'm Dave, and this is Mortified. And today on the show, a very different kind of episode. One that asks, what if you created something as a kid that gave you the tools to navigate something you're facing today? Hear the unusual tale of a boy who sets out to save the one thing he loves most.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
And accidentally save something more important in the process. A story that spans decades, notebooks, and countless hours of TV.
I just love TV so much that I wanted to capture in a bottle. TV gave me comfort. It showed me warm people, smart people that connected with their kids and, you know, protected them.
Ever since he was a kid growing up in 1960s Southern California, John knew his life was nothing like the one he saw on TV.
Beaver, we want you to feel that you can come to me or to your mother at any time with any problem and we'll understand.
I was an only child. I was a very different kid and very sort of withdrawn. And, you know, I just really didn't get kids that much, you know.
Living with his mom in a little studio behind his grandma's house, John had the starring role in his tiny family's life.
My mom and I moved in when I was a toddler. My dad wasn't in the picture at all. My mom had left him when she was pregnant with me.
He liked his world the way it was. Tiny, safe, predictable. But as his bubble inevitably grew, he struggled to adapt.
I was a loner. I was a little bit sort of like Stewie from Family Guy. I was, you know, a little bit snooty and judgmental.
My God, wouldn't it be marvelous if I turned out to be a homosexual?
The great thing about TV, especially in the 1960s, is that everything that happens in life, the heartbreak, the hijinks, the big twists, literally fits in a box. So even as far back as preschool, John just assumed he too had control over life's script. After all, he even had wacky neighbors coming over to deliver outrageous punchlines.
There was this neighborhood kid named Willie in Newport. I was in like preschool, and his dad came over, my mom says, and said, your son is going to grow up to be either a mass murderer or a homosexual. And this is like in 1965 or something. And he was right on both counts, frankly. You're next.
But at age six, John lost control of his happy little home life. It was 1969. The same year that shows like Brady Bunch and Sesame Street debuted. And the boy who loved TV suddenly found himself living in a surreal family sitcom of his own. One whose pilot episode began when his mom met
this gentleman, that Nicholas, who was overwhelmed with eight kids because his wife had gone off to go find herself in the late 60s. I moved in with them in kindergarten.
It seemed like an okay premise at first, except for the fact that
it wasn't really, I don't think, explained to me. It just sort of happened, and I was just sort of shell-shocked.
As much as he wanted, John couldn't change the channel. It was like living in an alternate timeline Brady Bunch, where the writers got everything wrong. Instead of three adorable girls blending with three adorable boys, it was one baby Stewie blending with eight unruly siblings, leaving John wanting to have a word with his
Mommy! Mommy! Mama!
They were totally different than me. They were like smoking pot and punching holes in walls and, you know, during fights and screaming and running around the house. And I mean, like nobody bullied me. It was, you know, there was a love in the house. It was just sort of not what I expected.
And then there was the matter of the house itself.
Our house was the house on the street that was like, oh my God, it was almost like the Addams Family house, you know. The place was this turn-of-the-century clapboard ranch house that, you know, had like holes in the ceiling. So every time it rained, there were pots everywhere to catch the water. There was like dirty stuff on the, you know, kitchen. Like everything was like, you know, just a mess. It just made me look around my environs and go, why is the kitchen filled with caked, you know, icing, like dripping stuff that was, you know, that dried like 2 years ago? Why hasn't that been cleaned yet? There were dogs pooping on the floor. And frankly, you know, I'm watching the Brady Bunch, you know, I'm seeing their beautiful house, you know, two-story architectural dream that, you know, that Mike designed. And I'm like a gay kid in waiting. And if a friend was walking with me back from school, I would pretend to go into another house that looked like the Brady Bunch house.
John was uncomfortable with all the changes. He wanted control. Luckily, his mom understood it was challenging.
Oh, no, it doesn't have to be awkward. Not if we don't make it awkward.
So, to ease the transition.
My mom made sure that I had my own room. It was a nice room, frankly, because I kept it very nice, constantly clean, painted red hardwood floors, it was perfect. If you sat on my bed spread and mussied it, as soon as you got up, I would fix it. You know, I just wanted that room to be my little oasis of perfection compared to the chaos that was around me.
Okay, I like where this is going.
John's bedroom became his sanctuary. And just like any sanctuary, his had an altar.
I did have a TV. It was high up and it was facing right towards me. It was a black and white TV. 13 channels and UHF. It had one of those dials that like every time you changed the channel, and it had an antenna. Remember those days?
Next week, a visit to a hostile planet on Lost in Space.
I was lost. I was lonely. I was like maybe a sort of PTSD. I mean, I was on my own in this world, really. You know, like I didn't think I could hop in the TV and live there. You know, I wasn't that, you know, far gone. But it was a total escape.
Decades before Netflix made it popular, John binged whatever he could. And he uncovered a treasure trove of TV obscurities where life seemed tidy and coherent. Shows you've probably never heard of, like James at 15 and the
Carol Williams Show, which was an I Love Lucy knockoff.
And then My World and Welcome to It. Also,
Nanny and the Professor.
Plus Rat Patrol and something called
Checkmate.
But when he was about 12, one series in particular grabbed his attention.
My favorite show of all time was The Big Valley. And I discovered that probably around like 12 or 13 in reruns. And it's a Western that aired on ABC from 1965 to 1969. It didn't last nearly as long as it should have, with Barbara Stanwyck and Lee Majors. Basically, he was the bastard son of Barbara Stanwyck's dead husband. And I related to Heath because he was different.
I said, who are you?
Your father's bastard son.
And he was treated as differently. He came to this family sort of not, you know, well received initially. You know, they were like, who are you? And I related to that guy.
John related to so many aspects. After all, as a kid in Van Nuys, California, he too lived in a big valley. And he too had a mother who was
just a really strong mother figure. She was like my mom in many ways.
And so, if you were my son, I would say to you, be proud. Because any son of my husband has a right to be proud.
When John saw the final episode, he wanted more. But these were reruns. There was no more. So, he began to feel something unexpected. Grief. And for John, mourning the loss meant visiting the TV equivalent of a cemetery.
I became obsessed. I wanted to know everything about the history of the show. So I somehow found books and about TV history. And when I cracked them open, I'm like, oh my God, there were a lot of shows that I've never even heard of. It was like a spiral.
The time tunnel.
Like I wanted to know everything about, you know, the history of television. Like The Big Valley, I was like indignant. It only ran 4 years when Bonanza ran like, you know, 20,000 years. I hated Bonanza. And so in looking over all these TV history books and stuff, I just was like fascinated. Like, well, that show should have been a hit.
To John, the demise of his favorite show spurred him to put on his sheriff badge and take control of the situation, just like his heroes on Big Valley did.
You're always yapping it up about justice.
The show must go on. So in 1977, at the age of 14, despite lacking YouTube, DVRs, or even VCRs, John found a way to ensure it did.
So that's when I created my own network, TV network. And I call this network the National Broadcasting System, NBS.
Do you like the stories you hear on the Mortified podcast? See it live. We've got upcoming shows in cities across the country. This week, you can catch us in Baltimore and Los Angeles. This spring, you can catch events in Portland, San Francisco, Oakland, Austin, Chicago, Brooklyn, DC, and more. Get your tickets at getmortified.com.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
I was president and chief programmer. I really called the shots at NBS. I wanted to create this like world where all the shows that I read about that didn't make it or weren't hits, I wanted to make it that they were still on and bigger hits than they were in real life. It was completely in my mind and in the binders that are just set before you right now. God, I made, you know, the typical network schedules that you see with all the different shows.
For those of you who grew up reading issues of TV Guide, the binders kind of look like that. There are grids for time slots, networks, and days of the week. Some pages feature summaries of shows, but each page is like witnessing the history of TV, or rather, one kid's completely made up history of TV. And as far as John was concerned, his was a better one.
I would take a ruler and on plain paper and do like a big line, like for 8 to 9 and then 9 to 10 and then 10 to 11 down at the top, fall schedule, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
What began with a single grid grew into something larger. Soon, John made another and another.
I would say I did like 300 of these grids. 300. I mean, we're talking three thick binders of stuff here. These are like books, you know.
Suddenly, John wasn't just watching TV as an escape. He was creating an elaborate universe that he controlled. And by his teenage years, NBS had become a well-oiled imaginary machine.
Okay, so on Wednesday, we on ABC, 8 is Enough at 8 o'clock.
CBS,
Incredible Hulk. And then we had Julia. It was Adam's Rib on NBS. And then at 9:30 on CBS was The Stalker's Channing Show. Was The Big Valley, a special 90-minute version.
John began to feel pride about NBS, so much so that he was
very pompous about my success at NBS. I actually wrote in like percentages, and NBS always won in the ratings.
As NBS grew, the line separating fantasy from reality shrank. John began to write an encyclopedic history of the network. The scheduling grids were now joined by articles, corporate memos, and reviews, and sometimes John even made up fake news stories about real celebrities. Observing a footnote in an entry about Vegas getting canceled, John pointed out,
there's a little asterisk next to it, and it says, it was canceled, but it was brought back. It was saved because Danny Thomas died. So Vegas was actually kept on the schedule last minute because the Danny Thomas show never was brought to air.
John wrote this around 1979. Danny Thomas died in 1991. So yes, for the sake of his imaginary network survival, John buried actual celebrities who are still alive.
I kind of made it up.
You killed Danny Thomas?
Not on purpose. It was probably a little manipulative because I probably realized that Vegas still had potential to be a hit, even though it didn't do well in its first season. So I thought, well, how can I save it? I have to make Danny Thomas die so his show can't be on NBS.
So in a weird way, John's neighbor wasn't totally wrong when he said,
your son is going to grow up to be either a mass murderer or a homosexual.
NBS increasingly became John's secret way to unwind. A hobby that not only grafted imaginary elements onto the real world, but eventually began doing the reverse.
Unfortunately, Love on a Rooftop was canceled, and you look down at the reason why, and down at the ratings, it's not what I thought of. It's not because of the ratings. It's because of the stars quit after Peter Duell's death.
What was once just playful imagination had evolved into something that processed life's harsh realities. We looked it up. Actor Peter Duell shot himself in the head in 1971. In fact, his life served as the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's troubled character in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
It's dark, but I wanted to honor the fact. I mean, I wanted it to be in reality. You know, like, things happen.
31-year-old actor Peter Duell was found at his home in the Hollywood Hills, the victim of a gunshot to the head.
NBS awakened something in the teenager, and not just a God complex.
I couldn't wait to get home and look through the history books of the TV history books and think about my face. Oh, that'd be a cool show to put on NBS.
With numerous shows resurrected or obliterated, NBS gave John an adrenaline rush.
This is the television game in which daring determines the fate of the player. This is the game.
I'm loving the drama. I'm loving the up and down of it. It's like it was sort of addictive. Like, it's strange because I was sort of controlling everything, but I didn't know what I was going to do. It's sort of like chess in a way, but playing solitaire, I don't know.
But the high became increasingly hard to satisfy. So John upped the ante.
I was running out of shows from history, like real shows that aired, you know, the past, you know, whatever, 30, 40 years. So I would create shows like, oh, how about this? Undersea City, science fiction cartoon on NBS since 1977. Voices supplied by Dusty Kikes. Now, I would come up with the names of these people too, like the stars. I don't know who Dusty Kikes is, but that name should be changed. Gazing Meadows, soap opera appearing on weekday afternoons since 1975. The cast includes Mary Sims and Roderick Tinge as the troubled citizens of Gazing Meadows. Moonbase Tyra, German-produced sci-fi show.
After a year of filling his notebooks with NBS ideas, John still hadn't told anyone about it. I mean, who would understand? What would they say? Would they judge him? And in that silence, the network quietly began to take control over his life. By his final year of junior high, ninth grade, he began to struggle with something else he couldn't control.
I knew that I was gay, and there was no changing that. It was very, very painful. I just cried and cried and cried. I said, please, God, why do I have to be gay? It was traumatizing, frankly, for my whole life. I lived in fear that I came across as swishy. I would be like, you know, like lower my voice or, you know, make sure that my wrist was straight. Thought that everybody would just think I was a big freak and that I was mentally ill or something.
He had good reason for that paranoia, like when he overheard his mom's friend talking about him.
And at one point she said, oh, and that son of hers, what a flaming fag. It's like, who is he kidding?
I never said a guy who wears glasses is a queer. A guy who wears glasses is a four eyes. A guy who is a fag is a queer.
So he doubled down on the one thing he was allowed to love.
Oh, this is like an old cassette, an RCA, like old school cassette player, and you're going to hear a clunk as I play it. We're going back in time right now. Okay, here we go.
That was Mrs. Columbo, BJ and the Bear.
I can call a lot of things, but I never can call Rico.
We're turning that off.
John began recording himself as the network's announcer, announcing something that only he was going to hear. So, decades before Andy Cohn cast himself as an on-air personality on the same network where he was an exec, John sort of did the same thing, but as a
16-year-old sitting by his grandmother's TV set with his little miniature dachshund schnitzel walking around. You could hear the chains clanking, tape recording theme songs and promotions. Like, oh my God, what's coming this fall? And I love theme songs and intros, and they don't even have them anymore, which is sort of sad. But anyway, so this is me announcing.
That, of course, was the heartwarming Friends.
Yes, that's John announcing an obscure 1979 Aaron Spelling show called Friends, a flop on real TV, a smash on NBS, at a time when Ross and Rachel were just toddlers watching shows like
Maude.
Of course, no network is complete without an award show, which explains why John produced the following. And as a quick side note, John's middle name is Davison, so he often went by Davey.
Davy's Choice Awards with your host, Bob Hope.
NBS spared no expense for the award show, which basically featured every famous person that a 1970s teenager could think of.
And also starring Eddie Albert, Al Minalda, Julie Andrews, Eddie Arnold, John Astin, Desi Arnaz, Lucille Ball.
In fact, it seems to be the only award show where the list of stars was longer than the show itself.
George Carlin, and Johnny Carson. Special guest appearances by Judy Kern, Sid Caesar, Chevy Chase, Imogene Coco, Jane Curtin.
And just when you think it's done?
Not to mention Clint Eastwood, Jamie Farr, Sally Field.
This goes on for two pulse-pounding minutes. Of course, no award show is complete without big speeches and hilarious monologues. So John wrote his own.
And now, the moment you've been waiting for. To start off the ceremonies, here's the master himself, Bob Hope.
Thank you. Thank you. Master, huh? I'm not so sure I like that term. How many of you saw Roots? The thing is, the closest I'll ever get to a master is a key. And now, here's Leon Faramajors to give out the first award.
One day, as part of a school assignment, John convinced a classmate to present at the Davies, a rare instance of him sharing the NBS universe with an outsider. They probably just assumed they were making a goofy tape, but they had no idea they were entering a universe that John commanded.
And now, to present the best comedy series for 1977 to 1978,
here are Robert Wagner and Natalie Wood.
Still, he made his most ambitious recordings home by himself.
Coma, the number one suspense thriller. Genevieve Bujold, Michael Douglas, nominated for 3 Davy Awards.
By the end of junior high, John had amassed control of such a vast imaginary empire that you'd think he'd be thrilled. But something was missing. He felt frustrated.
It was getting boring that, for me, that NBS was so successful all the time.
At 15, John was still secretly scribbling in his NBS notebooks. He was isolating more and more at an age when the pressure to have a social life looms more. And the few friends he did have?
When we'd talk about the Big Valley being better than Bonanza, because my friend liked Bonanza. So it was that level of coolness.
He knew something was amiss.
I mean, it was about to go from junior high to high school. I thought, you know what, time to change the show here. I just felt very like in the wrong place. I was living sort of in chaos at that house with all the stepbrothers and stepsisters. I felt lonely and isolated and different and weird. I was realizing I was gay and felt uncomfortable and sad about that. And like, I just thought, I need a change. I need friends and less chaos.
So John told his mom he wanted to live with grandma an hour away in sunny Newport Beach.
And she said, okay. And didn't really say anything, and it wasn't emotional. I felt very awkward. I wanted to be with my grandmother because she was very loving and supportive. I mean, she took me to Disneyland, and we would dance the tango in the living room. She was just full of life, and at the time, my mom was very in her own world and quiet. And as it turns out, she was going through some sort of depression herself. On Christmas, everybody would get a gift, and they'd forget about me a couple times, and yeah, even my mom, I was pretty much left alone.
So he started high school in a new place that was actually an old place, the same one he lived in before life became.
So I, you know, got there at 10th grade when, you know, everybody knew each other. I knew nobody, not a soul. So I was very lonely. You know, my best friend was Schnitzel, my little miniature dachshund, but he was a good doggy. He was a good friend. And when I transferred to beautiful Newport Beach, California, land of the beautiful, perfect people, I don't know why I decided that would be a good, good idea. Because suddenly I'm walking in the quad with all these people that were bigger, taller, hotter, cooler, richer for sure, driving to school in their own BMWs or VW Cabriolet convertibles. And I was getting dropped off by my grandmother in her 1969 Chevy Impala. I felt like nobody liked me. I was different than everybody. I was sort of like a leper, like a ghost or something.
Just like Lee Majors on Big Valley, John was a stranger trying to adapt to his new life. But he wasn't a cowboy. He couldn't impress the locals with knowledge of horses and whiskey and fistfights. So he turned to the one thing he did know a lot about.
So I, not giving up, decided to enroll in the CDM morning news class, which was filled with a lot of audiovisual nerds. I tried out as the anchor of this taped 5-minute news show about the happenings at the school, and I rose the ranks to anchor very quickly. I was shocked because the teacher, Fred Cutler, thought I was great. I got a certificate that said, best newscaster. But that morning news show did not make me popular. It made me less popular. Kids would make fun of me. There was this guy that called me Howdy Doody of the morning news. And it stuck, and he and his friends would say, hey, there's Howdy.
The bullying led John to quit.
And I told that to the teacher. He was really upset and said, I can't believe this. I'm going to lose my funding. And he wouldn't say hi to me in the hallway. That's a terrible thing to do to a kid, by the way. It's not like I'm a huge star. It's not like this is like ABC or even NBS, by the way. Maybe he went home to do his own NBS ratings as well.
By the time high school graduation neared, John's loneliness had given way to bitterness. And just like his TV favorites, he learned everyone's a critic.
I'm like, God, you know, if only these people knew how fun I was and smart and interesting. I was mad at people. I was mad at myself. I had critics in my own head saying, John, what is wrong with you? Why are you shy? Why aren't you engaging and letting people see how cool you are? So, yeah, I had a lot of critics in my head and I was sad. But that was then.
One afternoon, the self-loathing grew too much, and John attempted to take control of his fate.
My suicide attempt actually happened in this room I'm standing in now. I knew that I was gay, and there was no changing that. It just really was hitting me more and more that my life was going to be, in some ways, not a good existence. And I thought, well, I'm just going to kill myself. I wanted it to look like an accident so that nobody thought I was that miserable, especially my grandmother and my mom. I just wanted to go out as a happy, fun, straight guy that was fixing his stereo and got a terrible electric shock. I'm looking at the electrical outlet where I had planned to plug in my stereo. I went to the bathroom that's right here, and I doused my right hand with water and took the plug from the stereo and put it into the socket. Obviously, I didn't take electric class, you know, or I did, but I wasn't like an A student. So I got a big shock, and I realized that, wow, that was stupid. And I started laughing, and it took a big shock to realize that nothing is worth killing yourself over. I want to live. I want to enjoy my life. It gave me a kick. With NBS, a show can die or get canceled, and it could look like it's curtains for something, like a show. But I gave myself the control to save things. And that's the interesting thing about life. It is a lot of things hanging on by a thread, and something can come in and save it or save you. And it could be anything. A dumb mistake could even save you.
Given a second chance, John knew things had to change in a big way. Whatever he'd been doing no longer served him. So he took a page from the TV playbook and delivered a shocking twist.
Although NBS seemed set for many seasons to come, the network and industry were surprised to find the ratings second to ABC's at the end of the 76-77 season. It was true, NBS received astronomical ratings in the fall, but at mid-season's first week, NBS's ratings were horrid third place, undoubtedly due to the firing of Griffiths, entertainment executive VP. That's me, or a version of me. Yeah. Although Griffiths had kept NBS number one for the past 5 years, the network felt Griffiths was uncooperative with fellow executives. No.
And just like that, John canceled himself for being socially unacceptable, a dramatic beat that rivaled any in the Big Valley.
I could kill you quickly, you know, but I won't, because you must be punished. The whole world must know what you are.
Looking back on his accomplishments during the network's heyday, John discussed the show that put him on this strange journey to begin with.
I think the most satisfying thing about NBS and calling the shots and just having my own network was the fact that I could make the Big Valley a big hit. You know, I'm just thinking right now, I started this probably when I was just realizing I was gay, and it was a retreat from that too.
As high school progressed, John continued updating NBS here and there. It was healing, a way to relieve stress. It's kind of like knitting, only with Nielsen ratings. Eventually, NBS Brass begged him to return, a position he accepted. He missed the rush. And this continued until one day in his mid-20s, when John decided it was time to change the channel and stop living in fantasy.
I probably stopped when I came out at age 26.
And when he told his mother, her response was not one he expected. She said,
"Well, is that all? From what I've read, you can't do anything about that."
As the weight lifted, the network that no one knew about went off the air. After 300 scheduling grids, endless shows saved from doom, was it worth the effort?
It saved me. It totally saved me, you know. It kept me sane among the chaos, and I don't just mean necessarily like the environment of like having eight stepbrothers and stepsisters, but really, you know, like sexual confusion.
Keeping meticulous records of an imaginary world gave John a way to cope with intense periods of isolation and anxiety growing up. And now, decades later, those very records still come in handy.
Every now and then, I look through them and I'm like, oh, that's interesting that I did that. And sometimes I'm like, that's crazy. But it gives me comfort. Like, I'm looking at a real history, like a lot of time I put into something. And it...
But it's a real history of something that's not real.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? But it's also very real. NBS is a very real company to me. I don't think I shared it with anybody. I don't think I really showed my mom. I didn't think anybody would really care. And it was also mine. It was mine. It was my world. And NBS was my world, you know. And that was, it was nice to have my own world because the real world was not too pleasant.
And sometimes he still puts his feet up on the imaginary executive desk.
I'll do it every now and then if I'm feeling a little bit lost or low or something. It's just something fun to do. Like, you know, somebody mentioned knitting. It takes my mind off of things sometimes. I think that's why I initially wanted to do it. I'm trying to get some sort of control or structure back. It's a strange world, you know, and I want some order.
And just how strange a world? After decades in Hollywood, the 2020 quarantine led John to move back to Newport for the third time. Back to the same house he shared with his mom and grandma as a toddler and then later as a teenager. The one before. Da-da-da-da. So, the boy who longed for mom's attention during a difficult time now has it. And in the very same place that he last had it. And they're both helping one another and connecting like never before.
People are separated, increasing feelings of loneliness and isolation.
And while John knows there's no way to control whatever circumstances he currently faces, he's learned how to accept that, in part thanks to something that never even existed in real life. Which is exactly why it felt like a great time to finally tell his mom about a big secret.
Did you know that I created my own imaginary network called NBS, and I canceled shows, and I scheduled them, and I had... Yeah, I had ratings for them, and I
and
wrote...
You passed it around the neighborhood?
No, that was just for me. It was fun.
Oh. Well,
it's, so I created my own network in my imaginary network, and it was called NBS.
And so you programmed that and...
Opposite, I put my shows opposite the real ones that were on at the time... And then I would cancel some of my own shows even. And then I would write articles, like fake Variety magazine articles or Hollywood Reporter articles.
But wait a minute. Some of your own shows, were they just made up shows or actual shows that were on TV that you...
Some would be imaginary. And the ones that might have been a big flop on a real network, on my network, they would be real big hits. It would be this alternate reality.
So who won?
Well, NBS often won number one in the ratings. There were articles that I would write about me being the head of the network. Occasionally, there would be times when NBS was having a tough time in the ratings, and I... And I quit in a huff because I didn't like...
Oh, my heavens. But whatever happened to it?
Well, I kept doing that,
that fake network for years. I really kind of created this whole structured world, and I could constantly clear it and change it and tweak it and fix it and make it better. Sort of like what you do with your lists of clothes and stuff. And your fall outfits and your summer outfits. So anyway, do you have any interesting thoughts on that or any psychological observations? You're a former sociology major.
I don't think it's too unusual. It's sort of a game. It's fun, something to do, and maybe you learn something from it.
Exactly. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun.
In a way, all those years obsessing over TV was research. Today, John works as a journalist covering, you guessed it, TV. Over the decades, he's written for Us Weekly, People, Emmy Magazine, CBS Watch, and he's currently work on a book about the Big Valley.
This is a pop quiz. If you and I had a TV show, what would it be about and what would it be called?
If we had a TV show?
The two of us.
The both of us?
Yeah. What would it be about and what would you call it? Do you think it would just be a 55-year-old guy that moves in with his 85-year-old mom and the adventures they go on during the pandemic?
And the best part about telling others about your secret world is realizing you're not alone. Because everyone wants to be part of the magic.
I have a name for it.
Okay.
It's all up to John.
And is that because I'm a control freak?
Well, all the things that you do. Like you could always be doing something. Breaking something like, or you're at land, you rearrange the pillows.
Right.
I think that's very funny. I put the pillows, I have them a certain way.
Sure.
And then you come and sit there. And when you go, I have to put them back. And the chair, you pull that out and sit there. And,
right.
And then there, it's something like that every time. That should be in the show every time,
yeah.
Something like that.
That's
or
like,
you spill something on the carpet. It's all up to John. Or maybe it should be all up to John.
Or how about, welcome to my world?
No, that's sort of...
Well, I think right now this is a great show.
He came from Hollywood, went down to Newport Beach, living among the fancy people. And he's not. He's gay and kind of weird. But his mom is too, so wait, no, she's not gay though.
Can we get somebody else to write the theme song? What can I say? I'm kind of losing my mind here.
And this concludes our journey into the strange and magical world of NBS. Everything shared on today's show was true, no embellishing, no exaggerating, just God-given awkwardness. If you'd like to find out more about John Griffiths, in addition to being the founder of NBS, he is the founder of the Society of LGBTQ Entertainment Critics, and you can catch their annual award show, the Dorian TV Awards, on September 11th. You can follow them on Twitter, @DorianAwards. If you'd like to support Mortified, we have two great ways to show us love right now. First, you can tell your friends on social media about an episode of this podcast that you loved. Second, right now, you can purchase our upcoming home game, comes out September 29th, from the makers of Mortified, I Can't Believe I Did That, is a hilarious game that prompts you and your friends to share ridiculous adolescent memories, the good, the bad, the awkward. It's kind of like listening to this podcast, except you're playing it. And among the prompts featured in the game, this one, which we asked to John. Tell me a moment when you made a daring fashion choice growing up.
I had these very preppy pants in high school in about 1980. One side of the leg would be yellow. Another part was green. The right front of the leg would be blue. And the left front part was red. So four different colors.
Pre-order the game today at getmortified.com/game. And if you're craving more mortification, today's episode pairs nicely with episode 124, where a boy sends a letter to a producer of Saved by the Bell, and episode 47, where Will Seymour creates radio shows in his bedroom. It's shockingly similar to this, which is so weird to say. Find the full list of shows at getmortified.com/podcast. For companies wishing to support our podcast while reaching kajillions of listeners with remarkable taste, email sponsor@radiotopia.fm. This series is a team effort. Our podcast production team for this episode includes Cece Clark, Rachel Carson, Hadley Dion, Neil Ketcher, and myself, Dave Nadelberg. Special thanks to Sandy Tan, Sloan Korak, Nia Morgan, and Matt Harowitz, Chris Kay, Sasha Rothschild, Neba Noyan, Caitlin Burry, Kathy Tu, Joy Fishground, and John's mom. Musicians frequently heard on our series include Gordon Bash, Alex Burke, Adam Smith, The Angel, Zoe Rose Palladino, and Snake, Snake, Snakes. This has been a Mortified Media production for Radiotopia, a network from PRX. Until next time, we remind you that we are freaks, we are fragile, and we all survive. Oh, and by the way,
this has been a presentation of NBS. Tonight, after Cades County, it's the latest episode of the show everyone's talking about, Mortified. Will a little girl go bonkers after she finds out her diary can talk? NBS, you're looking hot.